to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay this man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show them a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, we'll be excited to Giants. Half-time finally, this has been all over the board. We have Mr. Frank.
Just you and me so far.
Just you and me so far? Well, that's a good thing. But we have S&P futures with the wildest. Well, now, last Friday, we're down 500-some points. S&P's down 47. So now today, in the pre-market last night, I mean, this stuff has been absolutely wild. We were up, we were on 300 last night, then we were up 260. And I'm going to get up here in a second. I think we're down another 200. So it's absolutely incredible, Maddie, that this stuff is going on. Now the Fed is involved. Are they going to cut a half a point? Is that going to make any difference to anything? I don't see how it would, to be honest with you. But, I mean, it's pouring money into the system, but it's not like there's any problem with money in the system. I mean, there's no issue with that. But, of course, you know, Trump is all over him with the thing. So, you know, we'll see. But that has been the market's balm really for 10 years now. Anything that happens, the Fed goes in there and does some stuff, and then all of a sudden we come flying back up and we pump up asset prices. But clearly, you know, nobody wants the market to go down a whole hell of a lot lower here. I mean, nobody does. Right now, the S&P is down 26. They were down like I think 35. They were down. They were up 20 something, and now they're down 26. And this is crazy world. So even now, the headline is Dow drops 300 points. It's only down 187. The headlines can't keep up with the movement. It's, you know, it's really something. I guess I've seen this before. I can't remember when, but the virus, of course, is Frank, how are you? How much money did you make trading spoos last night?
Why would I trade it? I'm looking at these spoos and I've been following them. We opened up down 5%, then we managed to claw our way back another 5%. And now we're down 3% from that upward move.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's. I looked on Friday, and the funny part is, if you go back to this morning, with us being down here, we're probably right back to that spot. We have the the S&Ps. If you go back to September 30th, 2018, so five quarters and a couple of months ago, you know, you look at last year, we were up a bunch. Whoever forgets the quarter before, we were down a bunch. So if you go back to September 30th, the S&Ps are like exactly even. The Russell is down 10 or 11, 12%. And the QQQs, which have the fangs in there, are up 10, 11, 12%. So the idea that, you know, that the market is up X or whatever, and the difference between, because I have people in both. I have people in the Russell and I have people in the QQQs, and some people are up and some people are like down. And the small cap has been horrible for a while now. Well, it did get up at some point last year, but now it's back down, and it doesn't seem to be getting out of its own way at all. Now, in terms of the virus, which, of course, is still on everybody's mind, not to mention, you know, the response to it and the speeches and all the other stuff. We're talking about 2-3 days ago. The president pretty much said it was a hoax in one speech. Come on, I mean, I don't think it is not to the point where anybody should be all that scared about it either. It's in the middle. It's a problem. It's a big problem. It's getting worse. And the question is it going to be something everybody can handle? Which I suspect the answer is yes. But we don't know. But now it looks to me, Frank, that those cases in Washington and so forth, that thing was here months ago. This is second and third people that have gotten this thing. They haven't been near anybody, the three or four people out in Washington State. It doesn't appear.
Yeah, but there's an awful lot of cultural and business connections between the Far East and the West Coast, so I'm not surprised. But here's the basic fact. Anything we do before we know something's a pandemic is, you know, overkill. You know, it's overreaction. And if we look back, if we do in fact have a pandemic, we'll say we didn't do enough. I think the problem that many of us see is that people are discounting the fact that it could, that there will be a pandemic. It's a hoax.
Yeah.
You know, the Democrats want people to die. Donald Jr. said that,
you know,
on Friday, and Pence was defending it on Sunday.
That's pretty scary.
I mean, this should not be bipartisan. We should be doing more.
It should be bipartisan.
That is wrong. And we hear the same anti-scientific stuff from some people when it comes to many other things, whether it's pollution, whether it's cancer-causing chemicals, whether it's global warming, or it's not global warming, climate change.
Yeah.
We hear the same thing, this anti-science stuff. So we have Mike Pence in charge of something instead of an expert in pandemics, a medical expert.
Yeah, right. Well, that's basically
That's like having me in charge of women's health.
Oh, you'd be better at it, I think. At least you care about it.
Well, I'd listen to my wife and other women. I could be in another room, in a room with a woman other than my wife.
it's unbelievable. I mean, this is one of those things where you absolutely just tell the truth, do the best you can, and people can handle it. I mean, this is somewhat the deal. I think what happened is the idea that if you're, you know, we're going to shut down the borders or this and that, which, you know, may help in some instances. But the idea that this hasn't been here for a while, I mean, I think a couple of these cases that they've been tracing now, it's got to be the second and third person that have had it from whoever the original person was, it appears to me.
Even we don't know that.
No. Well, I mean, if somebody, went to a hospital or a doctor 2 weeks ago and has it, they probably caught it from somebody in the hospital. So that's somebody who had them in there 2 weeks before that, is what I'm saying. It's not the first person through. It's been here longer than somebody came here from the middle of China last week and you and I caught it, is what I'm saying. It's been here, the estimates now, it's been here 6 to 8 weeks in some of these areas.
Right, and it's not, as Rush Limbaugh says, just a common cold.
No.
It's a contagious form of pneumonia.
And it affects...
And let's get that straight right there.
It affects older people, especially older men, dramatically more. Somehow or another, it's dodging kids, which is strange, but that's good. But if you're 75 years old and you're a guy and you're compromised in any way, this thing is big trouble for you. So,
and what constitutes compromise? They aren't sharing that with us. You know, Washington State, the death was not a woman, but a man in his 50s who was physically compromised. I just want to know what that is. I want to make sure cranky isn't a sign of being physically compromised.
Well, I mean, I think one of the things is we talked about it last Monday, is that the preponderance of men in China, it's way more men than women, the preponderance of men smoke more.
You know, God, they smoke so much more over there.
And, you know, they think that's one of the issues, which it could very well be. Now, does that for sure? I mean, who the hell knows? But so what industries do you think, I mean, who's going to, is there a spot where you can start saying, I need to buy this company or sell that company or whatever, Frank? I mean, I sent you guys this article on the stocks that are, quote, benefiting and are not benefiting.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of which, the girls, Audrey, one of her pals, went to the one of the ladies wants to go to the Walmart in Lamont for whatever God knows reason. So they go all the way out there. Well, it's actually not that far from Orland, but it's a nicer Walmart, right? If there is such a thing. The bleach aisle's empty. Right? So yesterday morning, 6:30, there I am at Myers. Not only is the bleach aisle full, they got it on sale. So, anyway. So anyway, this is an article.
I found a place. I had to go to Trader Joe's after we had breakfast. We just stopped, whipped by there.
This is after the guy died,
and
Trader Joe's.
The pasta aisle is empty there, but I know a place where the pasta aisle is full.
Why is pasta a cure?
No, because it's if you self-quarantine, it's an easy food to make. So pasta, beans, rice.
All right, so I have a solid 12 to 15 pounds of pasta in my place. So let's see, if I self-quarantined, I probably get 3 days out of a pound, even if I eat heavy, right? It gets me 45 days. Is that good enough?
Right, but you always feed your tenant.
Well, that's true, too. Or somebody.
Yeah. Well, and this self-quarantine is interesting, or public health aspects. And here I'm going to dump on a Democrat, and I'm doing this just for Kevin. But Nancy Pelosi said that any vaccine would be reasonably priced. Any vaccine should be free.
One would think. And swine flu was free, wasn't it? Jerry Ford's? I think it was.
I don't remember. It's cloudy.
Well, you see, you know, I remember the stuff from way back. It's, you know, what do you have for breakfast kind of thing. It's a. Anyway, I'm reading this article. This is from now. Let me say who this is from. This is not me giving advice. Heidi Chung and Anjali Kamiani? Oh, my God. Where do they get these names?
Probably from their parents.
Ding, ding, ding. Thanks, guys. Anyway, they're naming some of the farmers and some of the ones we talked about last week. What did we have? We had Moderna, which was Dr. J's big shot, stock, Gilead. Well, Gilead fell off on Friday for some reason. Are they all of a sudden not in the hunt, Frank? I know it's a couple days. Teva, the Israeli company, flew up one day and it got clobbered the next. So, and one day everybody's going and buying every pharmaceutical stock, and the next day they're kind of weeding out the ones that aren't involved at all and they're selling them. So, this is big pharma companies like J&J, Gilead, and Sanofi. What's Sanofi's biggest drug? I hear that name from time to time, but what are they?
I have no idea.
I'm not sure either. Betty, look those guys up. I mean, every once in a while they come up as a huge pharma. I don't know what their big drug is, but smaller names: Moderna, Inovio, Novavax. A couple of these have been involved with some of this Ebola vaccine too, right?
Sanofi mm-hmm. is a French multinational pharmaceutical company headquartered in Paris. As of 2013, the world's fifth largest by prescription sales.
Doesn't say what their big couple are.
I'll keep looking.
It says here, Moderna is leading the vaccine race with a candidate ready to be tested by the National Institute for Health, but it could run into problem scaling for the demand of an epidemic. Vaccines are unlikely to be ready by the end of the year. I have a really stupid question. If, for instance, Chief Matt and Frank had a small pharma company, who do we call to get samples of the disease so we can work on it? We don't have to go steal a body, do we?
Well, I'm pretty sure they've mapped the genes of it. I don't know how much of that at the beginning.
I think it just happened like last week. It's a
computer simulation.
Right, so if the gene...
I mean, for example, Tamiflu fills some empty slot in influenza, too. So, that's why it won't work on the coronavirus. I was wrong on that, by the way. Tamiflu and coronavirus. But, so, I think there's probably a bunch of modeling that you do beforehand.
Okay, so the DNA has been sequenced, correct?
Yes.
So anybody can essentially, not anybody, certainly not me, you don't actually need a test tube with a virus anymore. I'm showing my age, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, I'm just showing my age, is that what you're telling me? Home fitness, home office, and home entertainment. Companies that provide at-home services have reaped major benefits through the historic market route this week. They're talking about delivery companies being huge. Amazon most commonly used hand sanitizers were flying off virtual shelves, with several of the most commonly used brands of the product out of stock, and surging demand drove up prices of others. Imagine that. Zoom communications have gone up. At-home fitness provider Peloton jumped 12%. The Netflix is way up, so some of these are there. You ever heard of IQ? Often referred to as the next Netflix of China. also got a boost in the last week. So, yeah, there they all are. But I saw plenty of Clorox yesterday. Besides, are we even sure that bleach works on this stuff? Probably
no.
By the way, Joe writes in on Twitter, Trump did not say the coronavirus was a hoax. He said the Democratic and media hyperbole was a hoax.
Okay.
Boy, that's the difference. It doesn't make a difference.
That's
the same as his classic people say.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it is, I think what we need, we don't need either side. The last thing you want is him underplaying it. Then the Democrats get back at him overplaying it, which is appears.
But
to
that, like I said, you can't overplay it.
Well,
because if you don't, then the tragedy could be worse.
The
you know, let's have him pledge not to go golfing for a year and save the tens of millions of dollars we pay for security and donate that to the program.
I don't care
about him donating a stupid $400,000 a year or salary to the government.
Here's one we should read, but I don't want it to. What hygiene was like in the Wild West? I don't even want to consider that.
Kevin writes in, I'm pretty sure Pence isn't supervising in the lab. He's coordinating, acquiring, and distributing research funds, getting the funding bill passed, and seeing that reporting is up to date. I'm pretty sure he's qualified to do that.
No, he's not qualified to prioritize.
Well, anyway.
And I will stand and fight that battle.
All right, well, before you do that, let's fight the battle between the flu and the coronavirus. Another article here by Denise Grady, New York Times. Now, of course, I guess we could call that fake news, but we won't. It says, which virus the flu kills people. Mike Mulvaney, acting White House chief of staff. No, the Yahoo's more liberal-minded, so they're going to take a shot when they probably shouldn't have. Because this is not Ebola, it's not SARS, it's not MERS. It's not a death sentence, and I think he's right about that. But the point is, this makes sense. Yes, the flu is terrible. That's exactly why scientists don't want another contagious respiratory disease to take root. If they could stop the seasonal flu, they would. But there may yet be a chance to stop the coronavirus, and that's why they're after this thing. Because in many ways, the flu is the best argument for throwing everything at the coronavirus. Here's a closer look at the similarities and the differences. So which virus is deadlier? This is the coronavirus. I'll get that straight at one point here.
You can just say coronavirus, which is what it's called, and it's easy to say because it's the beer.
Okay, coronavirus.
There you go.
We'll see, now you
problem solved.
So if it was like Pabst virus, I'd be okay with that too.
Yeah, you would think.
Yeah.
Budweiser virus.
Schlitz.
But if it was Drury's virus, you'd be calling for more money to be invested in fighting it.
Yes, seems to be more deadly than the flu so far. An average of seasonal flu strain kills about 0.1% of the people who become infected. The 1918 flu had an unusually high fatality rate, around 2%. Because it was so contagious that flu killed, 2% can get you to tens of millions of people. So that's a big number. Early estimates of the coronavirus, how's that many? Death rate from Wuhan, China, the epicenter of the outbreak, have been around 2%. We've been saying this for a week. But a new report on 1,000 cases in many parts in China, published Friday, it finds a lower rate of -1.4%. Which we were reporting last week, maybe even lower, as most experts suspect, because there are many milder symptom-free cases that have not been detected. So that was the thing I found out yesterday, last week, about the SARS virus. It was bad enough where if you got it, you went into the hospital. Or your doctor. You were not going to just sit at home and say, what's wrong with me? The true death rate could turn out to be similar to that of a severe seasonal flu, below 1%. According to doctors, which it says even a disease with a relatively low death rate can take a huge toll if enormous numbers of people catch it. As of Sunday, there were about 87,000 coronavirus cases and 3,000 deaths. This week, the number of new cases outside China exceeded the cases within the country. Of course, I don't believe China. So the question is,
on any level,
yeah, even if it's 1%, the fact is you don't want people to get it. And the other thing I want to say here, I don't read the whole thing. If it comes higher, the hospital's already somewhat full with a bad flu season. So the last thing you want is another disease, even if it's if it's no worse or just a little worse than the flu, it's not like we want it. So if you can contain it, you know, you'd love to, if, but I don't know how you...
What's 1% of the U.S. population? Over 3 million, right?
Yeah, that's a real number.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
By cemeteries.
They're all full.
By oh, no, they are. I drove to Beverly on Saturday. There's a lot of empty cemeteries along 111th, 103rd.
Well, the one on 111th, well, not all of it's full. It's the old Irish cemetery. The one across the street, Mount Greenwood's probably got some room. You can go to the one where they, all the graves were all over the place where they had all the gangbangers. Remember that place?
Yep.
What's the one in, is it Marion? It's on Pulaski, right? Like 119th or something?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing but cemeteries around there.
Well, you can move to Forest Park where you have more dead people than alive. It's like the city of cemeteries, Manny. I always like to move into a town where there's more dead people than alive people.
No thanks.
Yeah, but they got nice houses out there. All right, so what do you make of last night's moves, Frank? I mean, what the hell, over?
I think you watch. People forget that doing nothing is a trading strategy. Just because you define yourself as a trader, or that's what you do, doesn't mean you have to put a trade on.
Well, Friday we were, you know, the markets were getting fairly, in, you know, up and down all over the place. I never saw 50 and 60 point moves in the NASDAQ futures like I did Friday. I mean, it didn't take more than about, I don't know how many orders, to turn it one way. And once it went that way, it just kept going. And the interest,
yeah, because everybody turns off their machine, the liquidity providers, the five of them that there are.
Well, it's,
so that leaves a few retail customers, and it's not going to get better. You know?
I know we were pretty successful at doing our roles because my guy in JD says, you know, these markets... I said, hey, we need to roll all these puts down, which we did, and we came flying back up, which were terrific trades. So actually, we could have used the follow through to the upside today. It doesn't look like we're going to get it, at least not now. But who knows? That could change in 20 minutes. I said, oh, hey, look, just figure out where you want to do these spreads, where you want to do your order, and put the order in. Because it's going to be the only order in there. Anybody who wants to take the other side at all is going to have to trade with us. And we were filled in like 5 minutes on like three orders.
And if you're putting in an opening order, put in a closing order.
Well, that's what it was, open, close. So what I'm saying, when I roll them down, say, for instance, the Russell's at 150, and you've got the 150 puts. Well, the next day, Russell goes down to, you know, 144 or something. Well, you don't really want the 150 puts. I mean, you're deep in the money. What you'd like to do is buy the, say, the 145 puts, so you're still covered, and sell the 150 puts. So you're going to do that for a credit. If the thing bounces back to 150, then you turn that spread around, and even though you're right back where you started from, you've made money on the spread. So that's one of the things you can do when things are moving around like this. But when you move down, it looks like there's no bid on these spreads. It looks like they're $1.50 at, you know, $5. But the thing of it is, the fact that there's no liquidity for you also means there's no liquidity for the next guy. So somebody might actually want to be buying that spread. And
well, somebody may just want the in-the-money put. They don't
right.
care if it's only five points wide, but they want the one that's more in the money.
Well, right, but it goes even for a straight order. If you look at an option stream or even a stock stream, it could get worse, and stocks can get like that too. If the option's, you know, two bid at four, and you say, God, what kind of a crap-all market is that? The answer is it's a pretty crap-all market. But if you want to sell something at three, put it in there at three. Because somebody else
is... You might even get it at 350, because
yeah.
if it goes down a bit more, that implied volatility is going to accept the premium, and all of a sudden you get 350 when it would have been three, all things held volatility
right.
held constant.
Well, you never know that somewhere around here, there's some guy going, if you're trying to sell a call, say for like a covered right or something, somebody else might be trying to buy that call, and he's looking at it going, wow, this market 2-4 kind of sucks. So if you put your offer in at 3.25, like you say, you've just bettered the market by 75 cents. He might jump all over it and say that's a great offer. I'll take it. But you can't.
And this is a situation where we walk into profit. So you scale sell
right
because you don't want to shoot your wad. But we see too often with retail traders, they go, well, what if it keeps on going down? Well, you know, what if it goes up? You didn't take a profit, you know?
Well, I think the right now the people who are getting whacked a little bit, we only got 30 seconds here, Frank, are the people that have been the buy the dippers and the people that are the long watchers. I mean, it's a lot harder to say I'm going to hang in there for the long run today than it was 3 weeks ago. No, it might still be the right strategy to hang in there, and it's shown in the past that it has been. I don't know that the Fed is necessarily the fix here. The fix is this virus slowing down by its own or by something somebody does or by a vaccine or by something. So obviously what you'd like to do is keep the growth of the virus down as much as you can for however many months you can until you get a vaccine. Now that to me would be the plan, right?
Yeah, a Manhattan Project
for
pandemics or even mini epidemics. But you got to have something in place. You don't shut it down. It is a question of national security.
Well, it's everything is. Frank, thank you very much, buddy. Talk to you maybe later in a week if the thing keeps going. We'll be right back with Mr. Who we got next? Oh, we got John Flanagan. Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howes, Mr. Webber on the board with Mr. Jeff Flanagan on the second. S&P futures down 27.75. NASDAQ futures down 34. Dow futures down 175. It doesn't begin to tell the tale. Last night, the headlines were Dow down over 300. And we bounced back to, we were up like 2-something. We were back down, and then we came back a little bit. Now we are down not as much as we were last night, but we're definitely down, at least for the moment. DAX down 224, that's 1.9%. FTSE down 59.9%. CAC around down 100, 1.9%. So European markets kind of whack. Nikkei, however, up 201. They bought a close and we were actually up. Chinese stocks, up 90 points, that's 3%. I think some people are actually going to work over there, but factory activity plunging below expectations. Maybe not their expectations. Hang Seng up 161.6%. That's somewhat curious. Bonds, 1.06. Wow. The bond, minus 0.65. Japanese 10-year, minus 0.14. So, bond rates are getting, I got short some bonds, a little toe in the water Friday, but, that toe is getting burnt. We'll see, where that comes back. Oil, up 45 cents, 45.21. That's right, 45.21. Brent, $50.24. It's up 57 cents. Natural gas, 171. It's actually up 3 cents. Barbob, 148. We got gold up 38 bucks, 1604. Bouncing back pretty heavy on the idea of interest rate cuts. Silver up 39 cents. Copper up 2 cents, 257. It's still not getting any place anywhere. Just as a reminder where we were last Friday, Dow was down 357, S&P down 24, NASDAQ down 89 cents, up 89 cents. Even though we came back huge on the close, it actually finished up on the futures. These days are a little confusing because Thursday night we closed with a big discount on the futures. So the futures were actually up on Friday, even though the Dow and the S&P were down. So, man, you ever seen such a long story in Traffic Weather Sports?
No, that's pretty long.
Yeah. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a crash already on the Stevenson northbound side just before getting on to the Dan Ryan. That crash has been moved to the right shoulder, but it's causing some delays as you're heading inbound on the Stevenson. I-355 to Lakeshore Drive is up 36 minutes. From the Tri-State, 27 minutes on the Stevenson. No issues on the outbound side. Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford are looking okay this morning, so that's good news. No issues in either direction on Lakeshore Drive. Traffic building on the Kennedy, especially out near O'Hare. Monday morning business traffic picking up, but no issues on the Edens. Suburban tollways are relatively quiet. Off the expressways, we have a couple of issues. Looks like Roosevelt and Canal, we had a pedestrian struck by a vehicle, Chief, not too far from where we're at down here. So emergency crews are on the scene there. Roosevelt Road at Ogden Avenue, just west, there's a crash reported. Car versus a light pole that happened earlier this morning. We think the light pole won that one. Also, it looks like out in the western suburbs, a couple of issues. Army Trail Road westbound at John F. Kennedy Drive. Just northeast of there, we have a fuel spill on the O'Hare Access Road. Irving Park at O'Hare South Access. Traffic is backed up on Irving Park as a result. That happened earlier this morning. And then out in suburban Wheaton, Roosevelt Road eastbound at Joliet Street, there is a crash. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, relatively mild temperatures, some sunshine as well, a high of 42. Right now it's mostly cloudy and 38 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 67 today. Right now it's clear and 50. In sports, Bulls were off last night. They'll welcome the Dallas Mavericks into town tonight at the UC. That's a 7 p.m. tip-off. Suns were off as well. Blackhawks and Coyotes were both off. College hoops, the Fighting Illini held on to beat Indiana down in Champaign 67-66. It's Illinois' first 20-win regular season. Since 2013-2014, Chief. They're now 20-9 on the year, 12-6 in conference, tied for second place right now in the Big Ten. So Illinois having an outstanding
season. What is the tournament this weekend or next?
The Big Ten tournament would be next weekend, and then the NCAA tournament would be after that.
So not this coming weekend, though.
Correct, yeah. Right. And it's in Indianapolis this year. Northwestern snapped their 12-game losing streak. They beat Nebraska in Lincoln in overtime 81-76. Northwestern has two conference wins, and they're both against Nebraska. Chief.
What happened to Nebraska, the premier... One of the premier schools of in sports, and now they
suck at everything.
Yeah, they're bad.
Now they do, I think, have two really good young coaches, at least potentially. Fred Hoiberg took over the basketball program this year, and he's got a big time class coming in next year, and I think they'll be great very soon. Football, they brought home, you know, the prodigal son, Scott Frost, who is like star player on the team, and then went to. Central Florida and had them rolling. In fact, they had an undefeated season, and then he went back home, and he'll be entering year three this year, and they haven't made a bowl game yet, but they're definitely improved their talent, and people are expecting them to take a big step. So they may be trending in the right direction in football and basketball, but, man, you're right. They have great facilities, great fan base, and they've just been terrible for a long time at everything. Ever since they joined the Big Ten, they can't win.
No. Well, so Illinois...
It's tough when you play a great team every single night, and that's kind of what you go against in the Big Ten outside of Northwestern and Nebraska this year. You have 12 teams that are really good, 10 probably locks for the NCAA tournament, and then you have Indiana and Minnesota who are no slouches. I mean, Indiana blew out Florida State, and Florida State's one of the best teams in the country, and Indiana is a below 500 Big Ten team.
But I'm no slouch myself. Judge, yeah. You're a tremendous slouch. Just saying, you know. Yeah. John, how are you, bud?
I'm good, Tom, and you?
I'm all right. Is there any way we could ban until we get this virus under control or a vaccine? Can we ban Trump and Pelosi from the airwaves regarding the subject?
Oh, I'd be in favor of that. You know, I hate to say it. It makes me think of the good old days when it took Reagan years to mention the AIDS virus. In the meantime, he was taking heat for not even mentioning the word. But right about now, we could use a little silence on the subject. I hate to see politicians make a meal out of this stuff on either side.
How many, this is a tough question. I'm saying, how many people do you think might have been saved if Reagan and some other people just didn't think it was a gay disease that they deserved or something?
Oh, God. I won't.
Yeah, I mean, just
have had awareness been heightened sooner? I mean, anything that could have been done to either allay irrational fears about it, or to, you know, ramp up, you know, the interest in prevention and treatment would have been, you know, so much better. So much time and energy and lives were lost, you know, for not doing that. So it's a black chapter in our country's health history, I think.
Oh, I would say you're right. Maddie, we lived on the South Side. JD and Dr. J and I lived in this big house down in Beverly. This is back in the 80s. And one week, you had this big fat, I forget, John, if it was a Newsweek or a Time. I think it was a Time. I'm like, God, what's this thing so fat for? In the middle, they must have had 20 pages because they were trying to combat, you know, the attitude that it was only gay people.
Right.
And then, oh, by the way, they must deserve it was like God's revenge or something. And they basically had the faces of AIDS, and they had page after page of people that had died.
I remember that.
I mean, it was hard to forget if you ever saw it. And, Manny, the amount of people in in California that died of AIDS before there was a blood test, because, you know, nobody even, a lot of people that had it didn't even know they had it, and they'd give blood and go to other people. Guys that own big wineries. You know who died from that was Amanda Blake from Gunsmoke. After surgery,
right?
And there were a lot of, didn't a couple other movie stars? Not the movie stars make any difference in regular people, but there were names on those pages that I recognized, just from, you know, TV and news and stuff. I mean, it was
remember Rock Hudson and Liberace, yeah. And these are like big, you know, entertainers going back into the 40s and 50s who had, you know, kind of, you know, been a part of American pop culture for decades and decades, and they were terrified. Word to get out about the nature of their, you know, changed appearance, the cover-ups, the horrible, you know, secrecy surrounding it. That is just a shameful, you know, part of our past, I think.
And I remember reading, Janet, I don't know if this is true or not, but some was a, you know, was a, just at the time it was in a publication in which, you know, they don't try not to put in a bunch of BS before fake news, shall we say. And some lady was doing research on AIDS, and she found somebody in St. Louis in 1959. They went back and checked his, if they don't know what you died from, they save some of whatever they save, some of the DNA or whatever from your body or whatever. I don't know, I'm no doctor, but they, whatever they, if they don't, like in the coroner's place, if they don't know what you died from, they save. Well, somehow she went back and investigated. See, it was 1959, this guy had AIDS. So, I mean, it's, that's when I saw it yesterday, last night, I was talking earlier in the show, that it appears from these people in Washington that have gotten this virus, it wasn't just 3 weeks ago from China, that it's been here, they think, 6 to 8 weeks at least. Because it's like the, because these people didn't come in contact, they must come in contact with somebody who came in contact, so it's probably the third iteration.
Right.
And
it's really not that shocking or strange that it would present in two cases in this hospital in Washington too, because hospitals are places where things thrive.
Yep.
That you don't want to catch, and you know, it confirms my belief that, you know, even the best hospital is still a good one to stay out of if you can, because if you, there's something around, it's likely to be there. And if you have patients who are post-operative or undergoing chemotherapy or any other kind of immunosuppressant treatment, they're candidates for something like this that is lurking in surgeries and instruments and everything else. So who knows? I mean, it's likely to be coming out in other situations similar to this, because we're still really getting a handle on what the thing is. And this confirms that we don't know all that much about it. I still think, you know, if this were an influenza-related death or anything else you can catch in an operating room, it wouldn't be newsworthy. It's just that this is attached to a particular thing that has gotten currency in the worldwide media, and people are talking about it constantly. But I like to think that this is no more newsworthy in many ways than things that happen all the time that we understand better and cope with and don't get completely freaked out about. So I'm keeping a cooler head about this even than I was last week, I think.
Well, I am too. I just, as Maddie pointed out when I was reading those statistics earlier from those couple articles, you know, if we're talking about if 200 million people get it, which I don't think will, well, 1% is 2 million people. That's a lot.
Right. And if there were to be an explosion, that started overwhelming the medical field and hospitals were, you know, unable to cope with the people coming in presenting symptoms, there would be a very different, you know, feeling elsewhere in this country and in the world about what to do next. But that isn't happening yet, and I don't really now think it's likely to happen. It's always a possibility with any kind of bug that it will be more virulent than was suspected, or that the treatments that were out there were not as effective as we hoped they'd be. But we go through that every year, and there's disease cycles that we've, you know, become comfortable with, and we don't get upset about them and don't change our behavior all that much to confront them or try to change them.
Well, the interesting, well, I can't kick it back up here, but I won't since we already did it. This article is, again, is from Yahoo, is even if we're correct, and we hope we do, that it's no worse than a real bad flu, okay?
Yep.
Somebody says, well, that's bad enough. you know what I'm saying? I mean, we don't need another one, because I think the hospitals have been reasonably full with the flu season this year.
Well, and the emergency rooms are full of lots of things like this that people, you know, who don't, to treat themselves very well or aren't hygienic or don't wash their hands very much or whatever, or they're compromised in other ways that they don't even know about, are going to be stirred up in a flu season to seek help for things, you know, symptoms they can't shake, sneezing, coughing, whatever. So that is something we do not get upset about to the point where we're crashing the stock market or anything else. So I think it's, you know, it's good that we sort of pull back a little bit and take a deep breath here before we launch into.
Well, I mean, no matter how you look at it, if it is right now, I'm hoping, because I'm doing as much reading as I can, John, I'm learning from the rest of you guys that are doing the same thing and reading stuff I'm not reading. I'm hoping it doesn't mutate anymore, and it is essentially a bad flu. Now the question is, if it is a bad flu, and it's at the time when we got other bad flu, it's not like we got double the capacity. I mean, people will still get help, right? But it's, right. But I mean, it's one of these things. It looks like it's going to need its own virus. I mean, its own vaccine, right? So, you know, so we're a year away from that. So to me, whether you're a politician, I mean, if I'm in charge, which I would, you know, God, but the, I'm going to walk out and say, here's our goal. We're going to keep it down to the minimum we can. Okay, we're going to treat the people we can, the best we can. It looks like it's most people survive. We're going to work hard on a vaccine, and the minute we do, we're going to get it out to everybody, like, for free. And our goal is that we'll weather the storm now. And by the way, in 6-8 months a year, we're going to have a vaccine. And because, I mean, what else can you do? I mean, I don't think we have the same... There's no way that our death rate's going to be the same as China, I don't believe. But what about these other... I mean, I'm seeing there's more cases reported in Iran this weekend than China. It seems to be flying around.
Yeah, I don't understand the concentrations in places like Italy, northern Italy.
Well, Italy, that's... We have one of our listeners helped us with that. He said the amount of travel back and forth between the high-end fashion in Milan and China is huge. It's a real hotbed of travel, because China obviously makes a lot of clothes. And evidently there's people that hop back and forth from Milan to China a lot. So that's the best explanation we've seen anyway, right, Matty?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
And, so maybe Iran same way, I don't know.
Well, I did hear that, you know, the fashion shows that, you know, normally overwhelm Milan and other places, you know, stitched into that industry. They're having virtual, you know, shows this year. They're not getting together. I think they probably do have a sense that this has affected their industry particularly. So it's very possible that they know exactly, you know, who traveled where and you know, how this thing has progressed. And that makes sense. That's what you get with a global society, I guess. There's all sorts of subsets of travelers who are more frequently in other places, and in a case like this, it accentuates. You know,
well, what
with them,
Jan? You have a view of. I mean, even though you and Kevin are not necessarily in the markets like I am, you have a view of the market being part of our society, part of people's portfolios, those kinds of things. What is your sense? And we're down. I'm going to say. Well, we're down right where we were if you look at all three averages, on average, we're back where we were September 30th of 18. Okay, so we're, and I'll look right here on the chart on the SPY. I'm going to say we're down off the top of my head. We'll see how good the top of my head is this morning. I'm going to say we topped out, we're going to make this 1 year so I can read it easier. 1 year chart. David will be on later. He's Mr. Chartman. We topped out on the S&P. Now, this was a record high. 336 would be on the 18th of February, not all that long ago. And now we're at 293. So what are we looking at? That's that would be 44 points, correct?
Right.
So of 336, let's say 12.5%, right?
Yeah.
By my head math. Okay, so... Let's say, for instance, maybe we're a little too high, maybe a little too frothy at 336. Maybe not. Maybe let's say we were a little high, say a couple percent too high, not 12. Right now, do you think where we are now is a legitimate number? By the way, we've gone down here to 285, which I think we were last night, a couple of times back in October and September and August, and bounced off those numbers. So if you're a graph guy, there's probably a reason why you think it might bounce here, but... Just in general, on this particular issue, Jan, do you think it's about right, not enough, too much?
I think it's about right. I can't, I really can't depend on anything other than just my sense of how things were pumped up so fast, so much in the last couple of years that whenever any kind of a glitch or a correction occurred, it would be bigger than probably we're used to, given the length of this run-up and the strength of it and the mood of the country. And just generally, you know, the positives that we're seeing, I think, politically, with, you know, the things that were supposed to be cataclysmic, like Brexit and, you know, getting out of Afghanistan, all of these things are kind of happening pretty much as people hope they would in a best-case scenario. So there are so many positives on the world front that I would suspect there's still a lot of good feeling in the investment world that will not only weather something like this, but will come back and maybe come back as stronger, perhaps even stronger. I think it's you know, with every boom, there's going to be a bust of some kind. That's historically proven, and there's no reason why we would be in any kind of different cycle now. And I don't see this becoming, you know, a cratering of things at all. I think it's probably likely to bounce back in the next week or so, or at least certainly level off, as it seems to be doing already. And I am much more upbeat about, you know, the future, short term and long term, now than I was, say, even in January before all this stuff happened. I was concerned about what happens in an election year and when the stock market, you know, can be manipulated or appear to be manipulated to achieve political ends too. But I'm much more upbeat now than I was before. So I'm not, you know, as qualified as any of your guests really to speak about this. But that's my gut reaction here, that I'm breathing a lot more easily now than I was.
I'm a little more negative. Imagine that. For really only one reason, John, is the fiasco in 2008, 2007, like a lot of fiascos before them, are usually they come about when people, something happens when the debt load is dramatically high, higher than it ought to be. And then it was like mortgage debt and all those kinds of things. And here we've come back, really, you know, 11, 12 years, in with a lot of growth, with an awful lot of people going back to work. Now, granted, the pay has not been anywhere near enough for people who, quote, have a job. Just a regular old mope has got a job. And so there's been issues there, that the person never has really been able to work his way out of debt. The person who had the house that lost the $50,000 in equity, I doubt he's been able to replace that, quote, equity. I mean, I don't think he's got $50,000 in the bank like he used to have $50,000 in his house.
Right.
And I see this worldwide debt, instead of with an unparalleled 12 year of, quote, statistical growth, even though I think you can point to huge swaths of our population that have had zero growth, maybe less, in terms of going backwards in terms of prices. And clearly the medical stuff, is, as I've talked a million times about, is all part of that. And worldwide, I see that in a lot of areas as well. And I see, you see massive amounts of countries that there's no jobs. I mean, and even, you know, with the, I mean, you go into this, you know, Joe Biden, or was it, who's the APEC the Jewish people don't like? Is it Joe? Or no, it's Bernie. And Bernie's, yeah, Jewish. And Bernie's like, okay, well, the Palestinians are 70% unemployment. I mean, you can't, at some point, you got to deal with that, or otherwise you never solve, quote, the problem. We seem to, this is my Southside Catholic upbringing. You know, I came to the hospital with a broken leg. You've done everything in the world. You've given me stem cell treatment in my shoulder. You've done everything in the world, but you haven't fixed the leg yet. I mean, somewhere along the line, we better address what's broken. And what's broken is this massive worldwide debt issue. And I just, even though I think that, I honestly do believe, I believe that I'm right with you on this virus thing. I think we do the best we can. We get ourselves we take care of the people who get sick. We hope it doesn't overwhelm the fact that hospitals are already full with flu, and we get ourselves a vaccine as quick as we can. I don't know what else you can do, but to use everything that at your power, which is substantial with the farm places and so forth, to beat the thing. You're not going to beat it tomorrow, but you might be able to beat it a year from now. And in the meantime, you do the best you can. And keep everybody, you know, less people get whatever. I mean, you do what you have to do. I mean, I think actually Mike Pence is not a horrible choice at this. He's way better than Trump or Pelosi.
Oh, I agree.
You know, the guy at least, whatever. So, I mean, I'm not a big Mike Pence fan in terms of his politics, but it doesn't mean he can't run this. But my point is that what I'm concerned about is I don't see how if you start stopping global travel, we go into a 2% recession because people can't get parts in places. I don't see how that doesn't collide with the incredible amount of debt growth we've had in the last 10 years and before that. I mean, somewhere along the line, somebody's not going to pay their bill, their debt bill, is my concern. I mean, if you start, you know, not having people at spring training games, and you got some guy who just paid $4 billion for a baseball team, well, there's got to be some debt there somewhere. You know, at some point, what if we have no crowds at the Final Four or at the NCAA? I mean, I've never heard of anything in our lifetime, even the swine flu or everything else, that has reached this stage. We might not have opening day. Anyway, let's continue to stay after the break. SP Futures now only down 975. Up, down, up, down. We're down a little bit. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? Have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278. 602-298-1278 so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
There's something happening here.
Low and one-page stocks and jacks. I'm Tom Howell. It's Matt Werber on the board. S&P futures now only down 13.50. Well, they were down 30. Then they were down 9. Now they're back to 13. NASDAQ futures down 11.75. If you wanted to get a headache, all you do is watch those things Friday. There were 60-point moves in like 5-minute periods in the NASDAQ. I mean, it's the stuff is pretty darn thin, but it's trading. I mean, it's all over the place. People are in there. We had a bunch of clients trading on our IB system, and fortunately, most of them ended up positive for the day, although there were, you're up and down in like a 10-minute period. A lot of people like to do that, and I'm not so sure that's my game. I like to, my idea has always been to find an option trade that makes sense and be a little more conservative on things, but a lot of people just like to, be involved in the market, and some people have some nice calls, and some don't. I mean, it's the way that works, but, yeah, Jan, the whole problem is you can never, one thing I've learned in this world is you can never hold anything constant. I mean, you can't ever say, if I just hit this ball to left field, I'll get a hit. No, because the left fielder might move over right where you hit it, right? I mean, nothing ever stays constant. So the question is, how much of a whack can we take? I mean, I hope we're in way better shape than, and look what happened after 9/11. We would talk about airlines went out of business 2 months later, damn near. I mean, it's not like, I mean, how much, I mean, Boeing, the most rich, they're about as rich as they get with the government basically doing whatever they want for them. When was the last time we heard about the 737 crisis? Nobody cares. We got too many planes now, right?
Right.
I mean, what if foreign travel and even domestic travel slacks off for like a year until we get this, until we get the vaccine and until we actually, kick this thing's butt like we will eventually, like hopefully we always do. Where's Boeing going to be? I mean, is it still going to be 277? Is it going to be 177 or 77? I mean, what is their drain on cash flow? I mean, even those guys can't keep up $2 billion a month forever or whatever it is. So, I mean, you don't really know. How many people in this country, if we don't have any flights to China, I mean, they're not even cargo flights. And so how do we know how many places here are scrambling until they can get parts from some other place? Now somebody's gonna go to Korea, or somebody's gonna go to Vietnam, but now, what if you set up shop in Korea and it's as bad as China? Well, then all of a sudden we stop flights there. I don't know how you as a guy moving around the world factory-wise, how you're going to keep ahead of it, because who knows where you put the new factory up, you're not going to have a problem a month from now. So, I mean, my concern on the business side is I don't know. You know, who's what where and who's most hurt and who's actually hitting their cash flow. I mean, I have to believe, what I'm saying. I have to believe that if Major League Baseball has to have nobody in the seats for 2 months. Well, I mean, hell, I'm not so sure I want to be the guy who just paid $5 billion for a baseball team or whatever they cost. So that's my concern.
But, all that being said, I think that, the market has proven itself to be very resilient and people too, and they're inventive. When they get shut out in one area, they do, find a way out of that roadblock and do something else, and you can't predict what that will be, and the people who are the first, to get in line behind something that seems like an alternative or a quick fix to something can do very well, and other people can get on that bandwagon. And that's been the case with technology, the stuff that nobody could have ever foreseen going out of business, the video industry, VHS, all this stuff that was, a big part of people's entertainment budget is gone and has been for a long time, and people have reinvented what that means, and they will continue to do that. And I think what's positive about this climate as opposed to, say, the 2008 thing is that this is kind of a, you know, a period where people are generally concerned about what to do next until they get better information about what's really happening. There was none of that caution or trepidation in 2008. It was the system being looted and subverted and crooked people in control of it. And that's what I still think hasn't been, you know, that well understood. But I guess the system is always capable of being hijacked by people with crooked motives. That it doesn't seem to be, you know, anything with none of that is afoot today. And I think if anything, the market is pretty observant about what's going on.
Well,
as long as you have a market like that, it's
you
good.
Keep, you know, keep
it,
using
it won't maybe be the same profile for these businesses in a year or two, but there will be, you know, a system that's functioning. And
when
and
you
travel will continue. It may go down. It may, you know, come back up again for unexplained reasons that we can't foresee today, too. But I feel better about this than I feel in retrospect about what happened in 2008, where the system was let out to people who didn't want it to function in an honest, upright way, and look at the disaster we have because of that. And as long as we don't have that, I feel pretty good about its ability to cope with situations like coronavirus.
Well, I don't. I share somewhat interesting that you have the top of the chessboard view, and I have the bottom of the chessboard view. My what we were taught in the Great Depression. The more I read about it. And we're taught it all the time again, although we don't look at it, because we like looking at, you're right, the market someday might be pretty quick, will be back where it was a few weeks ago. And the Dow will be back to a record high someday soon, probably. But the concern you have and this is where I thought Milton Friedman was wrong, I say this all the time, during the Great Depression, enough people got wounded, got wealth ripped off their balance sheet, that even if you would have fixed, quote, the system, if you would have poured money into if you could have, but I don't think there was enough stuff outstanding to buy, if you would have brought the stock market back in 32, if you would have, quote, had a bunch of new banks, if you would have, got your nominal GDP back up to where it was in 29 somehow, but there's no way you couldn't do that. Because 70% of the population couldn't come along with you. They were too wounded. You didn't get any money back to those people. And what I'm saying is, and I feel very strongly about this, I'm the only one who talks about this. I mean, this last thing in 2008, you ripped the equity out of an awful lot of people in their homes. Because their parents, instead of giving the kids, having in the will, they said, okay, here's 50 grand for your house. That 50 grand's gone. I'm not talking about the people who shouldn't have got the mortgage. Or the people who actually had the 20% down, the parents gave it to them, blah, 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 and that got ripped out of them. That's why I really think, John, that a big chunk of society, even though the, quote, averages have not come back, or have come back, have been left behind. Now, what you're talking about is, yes, there is no question that if this goes on for 4 or 5 months, it gets worse on the economic side, that someday, probably in this year or next year for sure, we'll find a way to get, quote, the averages back, we'll do something. But somewhere along the line, if enough people like don't pay from China or can't pay here, and all of a sudden you and I are the middleman, we gave the loan to China, but it didn't come out of our wealth, okay, but it came from, you know, Santander Bank or it came from Deutsche Bank, and we couldn't pay them. Now all of a sudden they go under in July. I'm not saying they will. Enough of this little stuff can happen under the scenes. Even though the Fed could pour enough money in to keep the market up high, that actually you got a problem. It's like a leaking boat. It looks pretty good from the top of the water. It don't look so good underneath. I'm saying it can get to be, that can end up overwhelming the good feeling and the good, I feel good. Yeah, but your pants are on fire. Yeah, I know, but I feel good. Yeah. I mean, so I'm saying you got to be careful of the underpinnings of this. Why right. do we have more debt than we did 10 years ago when that was a problem 10 years ago? I mean,
I'm with you, by the way, on what you've just said, and my take on that is in the case of Chicago, which, you know, is, we're born and raised here. We've as a city, we've never come back from the 2008 disaster, and I don't see enough investigation or commentary about the connection between our population drop, you know, and it's ongoing. It doesn't show any signs of reversing, I don't think, too soon. But how much of that is traceable to what happened in 2008, where a whole swaths of neighborhoods were just completely, you know, destroyed. They were,
yep.
They were subprime loans. They were abandoned. They got foreclosed. They were burned down. There was a vacant lot there where there used to be a beautiful, you know, 18-flat apartment building. All of this stuff has continued to haunt Chicago. It might more, I think, than other big cities. We haven't bounced back from that at all. And the long-term effect of these gouges in our national wealth, on the surface, things are good or good enough, but we are a diminished city. In terms of population and prosperity and our future wealth and our pension obligation, all this stuff has continued to weigh us down. I don't see that transforming, you know, because of what's happening in the market. It's going to take some other strategy. So, I would agree with you that there's
multiple
areas in which we pay a huge price and a long-term price, and we never quite get back to where we used to be.
And the last thing we need is a big coronavirus outbreak in Chicago. We don't need it. It's like all of a sudden it's 20 below zero. Do we really need an earthquake that night? I mean, can't it wait till it warms up a little bit? I mean, right? I mean, it's the little hits all around the place that are the biggest issues. And, you know, there's a lot of places that just, in this constant thing that even simple stuff, when people, I mean, I don't expect everybody to go into detail on what my livelihood is, and because I don't probably go into detail on theirs. I mean, although I'll tell you what, John, you know, if I sit down next to a truck driver or surgeon, I can sit there for 8 hours listening to the guy's business because I am interested. I would like, you know, but that's just me. I mean, I'm just an odd duck in that regard. But this, how many people are going to say, well, hey, look, the QQQs are back to where they were in 2008. Well, or 2000, actually. Well, yeah, they are, but the same stocks aren't in there. Oops. You know, so, I mean, you could have, you know, your mom or dad could have had his life savings in United Airlines and Sears and a couple others here in the Chicago area, General Motors. He's broke. He didn't come back. You know,
Well, look at what's happened to the profile of the national political parties.
Yeah.
That have been transformed. There wouldn't be a Sanders candidacy like what we've seen were it not for what happened in 2008, I think. And you know, it's the people who have been coming of age in the aftermath of that who have the worst prospects, I think, of any slice of the population. They're saddled with enormous debt. They can't find jobs that can help them service that debt. Their dreams of owning a car and a piece of property and having a family and educating those kids and everything else have just been put not only on hold, but they've had to be ratcheted down. And you wouldn't have a Sanders candidacy of any strength were it not for the lingering effects of 2008. You wouldn't have a Trump presidency were it not for what happened then.
Well, if you look at the...
All of this is a bigger, you know...
Sure.
Bigger change than looking at it just from a market, you know, graph of what's really changed in this country.
Well, the interesting part is that, you know what I found, John, is that some of the people on the right, not you, by the way, one day I listened to, what's the guy's name, Beck? Well, he wasn't on, but his flunky was on. I couldn't get rid of him. I drove to Pittsburgh to see a baseball game in Toronto. As I go through Indiana, every AM station, the guy's on there. And of course, he'd drop off, he'd hit the, you know, wherever the search button, and you'd hit, and then all of a sudden I'm in Elkhart and he's back on. You know, I mean, I couldn't shake the guy. So finally I'm listening. But the odd part there was the guys that were calling in, this was a long time ago, so Hillary was still the reason why everything was bad in the country. The guys that are calling in from like trailer parks and stuff. And I'm thinking, when did the Republican Party help you? I mean, what, I mean, if anybody ever helped you, it might have been the Democrats, but I'm not so sure they helped you that much either. But where do you get this? What I'm saying is I understand where what the people are seeing with Bernie and the young people. I don't agree with it. I'm trying to be like SPAC. I don't agree with you, but I understand you. They see, and if they're bright enough, they see corporations that essentially dodged taxes for 20 years overseas. They were able to effectively get the political muscle to get the stuff handed to them. And not to mention the fact they were able to buy companies with monies that other people had to send in taxes. And they essentially got a $1 trillion gift when everybody said, that's okay, bring the money home at, you know, half the price or whatever, a third of the price. They got this gift. And you know what? I guess we survived. I mean, I don't like where it landed us. And we're all with the guys that this is going to be the best thing in the world for you. It was $1 trillion, roughly, maybe $1.5 trillion, which is big dough, right, that these guys didn't pay over a long period of time. Now, Bernie looks at the student debt, which is roughly $1.5 trillion, and says, we're just going to wipe it out. Well, that makes zero as much sense as what we did with the corporations. But it's the same number, Jan. It's just a giveaway to the people that put you there. And as long as we keep doing stuff like that, I don't know what our future beholds. Because I mean, the idea is to govern for everybody. I mean, when I ran for the board of the SIBO, I think I had 200 and some votes, and I didn't get 55, which is, you know, pretty good, pretty much of a landslide. So I guess if anybody ever had a, what do they call it when you get in there and everybody wants to do what you want to do? What they call that? You know, what's the word? A mandate.
You know,
I guess but I didn't spend my first 3 years trying to figure out who the 55 idiots were who voted against me and do something bad to them. I mean, I figured, okay, I got elected, now I'm supposed to work for everybody. And you listen to everybody and do that kind of, I don't see any of that. I mean, and Bernie says, okay, if I tell people, I'm going to give them their State of the Army student loans anymore, I got how many votes right out of the gate? Just like Trump, a lot of the people in the corporate world couldn't stand the guy, but they voted their paychecks. Wait a minute, this idiot's going to get me back from Europe, and the 35% I'm supposed to be paying for years, they're going to, all the BS about, I got all the Starbucks in London, but by the way, all the profits in Amsterdam with one store, they're going to let me get away with that. I'll vote for this guy right and left and see where the chips fall where they may and on the other stuff, right? I mean, and same way, same thing's happening to Bernie. It's the exact same story, just a different
Absolutely.
Topic.
You know, there's so many betrayed voters out there, betrayed by, you name it, you know, institutional politics. And they feel they've been sold a bill of goods and they don't have to take it anymore. It's like, you know, Howard Beale and Network. You know, that movie was way ahead of its time, yeah. In 1976. I just watched it the other night. I was kind of gulping listening to this dialogue. But tying into this underclass and to inflame them in a way that, you know, makes them feel good. If I could write off my student debt tomorrow, wouldn't life be great for me? Well, you know, let's stop and think about how it would be any different, first of all. Not that it would be necessarily any better, but it's a quick fix to get elected, and then, you know, the way you get ground up in this political system to get in there means that you now become completely ineffectual, it seems. You're blocked at every path. So getting elected may sound like, you know, the key to a change in direction. It isn't a key to anything other than just, you know, chewing up a different, you know, circle of people who, you know, maybe didn't have representation at higher levels before. They're in there now, and they'll get chewed up too, just as people in the past have. So this is a quick fix to get elected, and it's hollow, and people who are older and maybe they've seen a little more don't understand it and hate the thought of it. But I certainly see, you know, how it's worked in the past, and I can't blame the Bernie people for feeling the way they do. I'm sorry that they think that he's going to be any kind of an improvement for anybody, especially themselves.
But they're willing they're willing to settle for an improvement for them. If he actually does that,
yeah,
I'll take it. And I mean, whatever else comes with it. But you know what I found in is you know, I argue with some of the Trumpies a lot, but I also listen or try to, Jan. And one thing I have learned is that even though you and I will probably agree that most politicians do nothing but lie to your face, right? I mean, it's good politics. They tell you what they want to hear. Part of it's your fault because you fall for it, okay? But not you personally, but you know what I'm saying. And
yeah,
and,
yeah.
And the interesting part is when you say, like Bernie says, you know, Donald Trump is a pathological liar. which in every case, I agree he is. He's to me, I think he's the most despicable human being I've ever come across. But I thought that before he was elected. Well, stories about people not paying this guy and suing that, but whatever. But I mean, what I didn't understand, and I'm starting to, is even my significant other, Audrey, says, why are you that concerned about him as a person? I understand why you have a problem with it, because you spent your entire life on a trading floor where your word was your bond. You're never gonna like them. It's just, he's never, you wouldn't want him trading next to you, you wouldn't want to play golf with him. You're just not, you guys are not together. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But the thing I didn't understand, Jan, is how vindictive people are to the rest of the political world. Now, they'll go after a guy like Obama and love him because he's young, he hasn't done any of that yet. So they're going to roll with him thinking he's another giant Kennedy. And he wasn't, right? Yeah. But he turns out he gets an office and he lies like a rug like everybody else, my grandmother used to say. I mean, it comes down to every single one of these guys has lied to me on taxes, on everything, from the day I was 2 years old. In my mind, Trump is no different. He says whatever he thinks is good for the moment, and he's just the last and most vociferous of a long line. He's no different than George Bush 1. Read my lips, no new taxes. It's no different than, Ronald Reagan. I'm going to lower the taxes, and the tax increase he put in a year later was as big as the tax decrease. But everybody forgets that, because they all like Dutch, right? And he was a movie star.
Yeah, it makes for kind of a cynical electorate if everybody feels that way. But I do agree that it's always been that situation, that the politicians have always, done sleight of hand stuff. And what's kind of apparent in a situation like what we have now is that you take somebody on as somebody you'd vote for and hold your nose in the process just for the possibility of moving things incrementally in a direction away from where it seems to be headed. And that was certainly what got Obama elected.
Yeah.
After the disasters in Iraq and Afghanistan.
He was new. He was uncompromised. He was good looking. He talked decently. Had a nice family, still, no family issues, nothing, takes care of the girls, wife and he seem okay. I mean, it was, we hoped it was the second Camelot, and it wasn't.
Right. And then that amplified, a howl to push it back away from what we kind of felt sold down the river by voting for Obama for. And you get Trump, not a career politician by any stretch, but with much of the same, practically all of the same political skill that, people have always had enough to get elected president anyway. And you put him against Hillary, and Hillary had enough negatives where, I'll vote for anybody but Hillary. And
I was in that camp.
Trump, was not a lot of people's first choice, but then the negatives around Clinton were so bad that they voted for him and took their chances and held their breath hoping that it would, but they felt it could never be as bad as if they got.
It's an absolute embarrassment with 300 million people. Those two people were candidates.
Yeah, it says a lot for just how strangely the system works to end up with those people at the top of the tickets, and to think of the possibility now of having Trump and Sanders at the top of the tickets, is it a lot less strange, really? But it looks like the Democrats are going to pull out every stop possible to prevent Sanders from getting there, and that's going to be, I think, the big story of 2020. It'll be a replay of 2016, but a lot more naked in its tactics and with a lot more disaffected people, even.
It's going to be, if it ends up being a brokered convention, there'll be some wounds out of that. But I remember my mom telling me, my mom was pretty astute. Once in a while, I stop in at the cemetery, and I go, "Hey, you been watching the news lately?" I was like, "But when was it Bush running against Kerry?"
Yeah, 2004.
They're both skull and bones, right?
Right.
She goes, "I never thought that we'd have two guys running that were both C students and both laid naked in a coffin looking up at dead animals." She goes, "We got to be able to do better than that." What if she'd have seen the last election? That was tame compared to this.
She should be writing for the Daily Beast.
Oh, yeah. Because I mean, isn't that the initiation of the skull and bones? You lay naked in the casket and stare up at the.
Well, that's what people say. You could never get either of those people because they're members.
Oh, yeah.
And sworn to secrecy. They never admit what they did. It's probably a lot worse than that.
God. Hope you have to kiss the nose of the thing up on the wall. It's been sitting there for 40 years. So John, my concern is, I'm with you, we will always come back. I mean, unless we have something that takes out 20 million people. Has anybody asked how many people can this take out, while life insurance people are still solvent? Nobody ever brings that up.
No. No, and it's not something you can really even measure until after it's come and gone.
Right.
Almost. We'll have to spend another day talking about that.
Yeah, well, we might have to have you on again this week. But S&P Futures down 24, NASDAQ Futures down 37. Come back with Mr. David Andelman to talk about what about the charts last night? What about those charts?
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, everyone. Pay Stocks and Jocks. I'm out. Mr. Ben Weber on the board. SP Futures down 1950. They were just down 23. Now they're on 1875. So this stuff is all over the place. NASDAQ futures down 27. Dow futures down like 140. We have been all over the place last night. The Dow was down 300, up to something, down to something. Back here to say we were down like the 100, and now we're a little more than that. So it is all over the place. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 92.8%, FTSE up 23.4%, CAC around down 31.6%. So mixed bag there. Asia, interesting enough, the other way. Nikkei up 201.9%, Shanghai up 90 at 3%, so they made back a chunk of their last week, even though their factory activity was lower, even what people thought was low. Hang Seng up 161.6%. Fans, here's a story, 108. I saw 104 this morning, but it's down to 108. The Bund, minus 0.64. Japan 10-year, minus 0.14. We've got oil up 61 cents, 45.37. 45.37 cents down 7 or 8 bucks in the last 2 weeks. Brent up 54 cents, 50.21. Natural gas up 2 cents, 170. RBOB 148, even though somehow or another I paid 10 cents more this week than I did last week. Not sure how that happened. Gold up 33 bucks, 15.99. Silver up 24, 16.70. Copper up 3 cents, 257. So not much help for the China people and the copper stuff. Betty, what do you got for us, Trev? Well, so you got individual stocks. Apple's up 370. We got Goldman Sachs down 370. We got UTX down 229. We got Walmart down 32 cents. Now report that the Walmart was out on bleach, Betty, and the bleach was on sale at Myers. Figure that one out.
Doesn't make a lot of sense. 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. A couple of issues to report this morning as you're heading out on a Monday. Lakeshore Drive southbound, just before Lawrence Avenue on the north side, there is a crash block in the right lane, and this has some traffic congestioning on Lakeshore Drive. Hollywood to Monroe is up to 25 minutes, so expect some delays as you're coming southbound on Lakeshore Drive from the Rogers Park uptown area heading toward downtown. No issues on the Kennedy, though steady traffic of 50 minutes out to O'Hare from downtown. No issues on the Edens. Eisenhower and Stevenson traffic building steadily. Still working on that earlier crash on the Stevenson on the northbound side just before getting onto the Dan Ryan. There was a crash that happened earlier this morning. That's been moved to the shoulder. It's pretty much clear now, but some resulting congestion from that. I-355 to Lakeshore Drive is up to 46 minutes from the Tri-State, 37 minutes on the northbound Stevenson. Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford looking like normal traffic volumes here for a Monday morning. Off the expressways, we have a crash southwest suburbs, Route 83 at 72nd Court. West of there, near Naperville, Yackley Avenue at College Road, there is a crash. Northwest of there, just past Wheaton, Roosevelt Road, which is Route 38, eastbound at Joliet Street, there is an accident. North of there, in Elgin, Irving Park Road at Chicago Street in Elgin, there is a crash. And then the only other crash in the area is something that happened an hour ago. It's still going on with crews on the scene. Army Trail Road westbound at John F. Kennedy Drive, there is a crash. Weather today, lots of sunshine, cool temperatures, colder than yesterday, but still pleasant. Partly cloudy skies with a high of 42. Right now it is sunny and 39 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 67 today. Right now it's clear and 51. In sports, Bulls were off last night. They'll welcome the Dallas Mavericks into town tonight. That's a 7 p.m. tip-off at the United Center. Suns were off as well. Coyotes and Blackhawks both off. College hoops. Illinois improved to 12-6 in the Big Ten and 20-9 overall as they held on to beat Indiana by one, 67-66 down in Champaign. It's the Illini's first 20-win regular season since 2013-2014. Brad Underwood's really turned that program around. Northwestern snapped their 12-game skid. they beat Nebraska in Lincoln 81-76 in overtime.
Chief. The dude who was doing the color game for the Irish like a week ago mentioned the Big Ten. Hey, David, how are you?
I'm fine.
Was mentioned that the Big Ten had 8-10 nice teams, terrific conference. Didn't see any one of those teams as a Final Four team.
Very possible. Right now, the Big Ten, according to KenPom's ratings, has three teams in the top 10. And they have, let's see, four, five, six teams in the top 20. But they don't have anyone in the top five. So, by that measure of rankings, you could argue that. Yes, definitely the best conference, top to bottom. A lot of really, really good teams, but they don't have that great team like a Kansas or a Baylor, or even a Duke. We'll see. But I wouldn't be surprised if they still got a team in the Final Four. But we'll see.
Well, who's the best?
Maryland right now has the best overall record. Michigan State was number one in the nation preseason. They sputtered earlier in the year. They're starting to click now. And talent-wise, they're the best, I think, by far. But Maryland has the best record. Michigan State and Maryland would probably be the two favorites to make a Final Four run.
All right, David, I got to ask you, what the hell happened last night? Down 300, up 250? Is this the
first? Well, the only thing I saw was you had more, bank CEOs, CFOs, calling for concerted Fed action, and not just Fed, but central bankers in a concerted effort. And there were some hints of that, and just futures, the forwards, the Fed funds, whatever, they're now giving a 0% chance of a 25 basis point rate cut at the March 18th meeting, 94.5% chance of a 50 basis cut at that meeting. So at least as far as what the futures are looking for, almost for sure, 50 basis point cut, and a 5% chance of a 75 basis cut. Point cut. I don't believe that, but then there was some minor Fed officials, not presidents, saying that there would be concerted, Fed movement, not just in rate cuts, but in liquidity and providing assets to calm the markets. And so that was, over 100 handles in the S&P rally. And then, the reality and whatever, new detections, et cetera, et cetera, and that, put the market back down.
With my somewhat monetarist background, with the economy slowing like it is, because obviously we've had huge slowdowns in China around some of these other places, and I got to believe here we're steady, we're not growing. I'll be nice. The thought that there's not enough money in the system is absolutely insane. Talk about putting perfume on the pig. There's no way there's not enough money in the system right now for somebody to get a loan. And whether or not...
I know, it's just psychological, yeah. Though. And you have much more monetary background, than I do, money supply and whatever. A million years ago, that was it. The tape for M2 on a Thursday afternoon, that was, they were huddled around the ADP to get it. But, I haven't followed that for a long time like you have. But that said, when they come out and they say, whether it's bank liquidity or just market liquidity, when they say we'll inject funds and we're there and the window's open and whatever, that, raises the psychological atmosphere.
Well, how do you, it does. But I think what the Fed has been my massive criticism of the Fed this White House, the last White House, last White House more because they were there for
the last five White Houses.
The last five White Houses is it doesn't do you any good to lower quote rates if the people you're trying to help can't benefit from the new rate.
And beyond, somebody made the comment, and it's true. If you had a ticket to Italy, and now there's a doubling or 50% increase in cases in 24 hours, and the Fed lowers the rate 50 basis points, are you going to climb on? No.
No. And I guess the the thing I've been hunting for a week from every guest that's been on, and I don't expect any guest to be able to come in and tell me this because I don't know that the news is out there. I want to know if things continue to sputter internationally, where's the weakest link in the chain? Is it international debt? Is it Chinese debt? Is it Italian debt? Is it where's the first spot where some bank goes, hey, these people aren't paying me, I'm screwed, or some company or some you know, whatever, somebody, some you know, some think, not think tank, but some wealth management place that somehow lent, you know, $10 billion to China. Well, the yuan is dropping like a stone. So obviously the people who are paying interest now in US dollars or in euro dollars every month or every quarter, that's a big number to come up with. Whatever it was before, it's a lot bigger now, right? And then China's not exactly doing so hot. So I guess where's the you know, the part of the boat that we're going to spring the leak. Like, and it's not as easy as
I,
you know.
My guess is, and I don't know this total guess, is you mentioned it right out of your mouth, Italy.
You think so? More than the dollar?
Yeah, because all the others can, you know, inject liquidity and, you know, ease and this and that and the other, and China's not going to let it, you know, go real terms. Who knows what they'll tell us, below zero, I don't think. And Japan has, I don't know how they do it, but they find a way to buy assets and whatever. And obviously our Fed's on watch and ready to pull the trigger. But Italy, there's only so much they can do. They have to go to the EU and say, hey, you know, loan us, do this. You know, we got demand problems as well as supply problems. And, you know, we need funds. And, you know, the banks there aren't well capitalized to begin with. And I think they've extended themselves beyond what they can.
But you've been always, who did you say long before was a canary in a coal mine? You thought it was Japan?
I still believe that, fundamentally. But how they've kept it afloat 4 years beyond what's reality is beyond me. So they obviously have some magic trick that they pull to keep the eyes away from reality. I still believe that is the weakest link.
Well, do you think the rest of Europe is strong enough to keep pushing someone? I mean, if these guys were not paying before, they can't be paying now.
Right. And that's the point. Sooner or later, patience runs out.
Well, I honestly don't want that to happen. But
no, I get it.
I was mentioning to John, it's always the, you know, the stuff that's unexpected. You know, the earthquake on the day it's 20 below zero. Well, can't you do this on a warm day? God, you know, right?
Right.
I mean, but there's no assurance for that. I mean, right now, I got to believe if you were to look at action around the world today, we're in a recession. It's lower than it was a month ago. By part shortages, by whatever. Now, having said that, I know some of the places where my nephew works and everything, they're busier than they ever have been because they're doing repairs to parts and machines that are here, but you can't get the stuff from overseas. So I think there's hotbeds of huge activity, David.
Right.
One thing's for sure, in the market there is, but here I have to ask you a question. I wasn't staring at it.
By the way, just before you ask, I just looked at the chart of Santander, SAN. Don't own any. Certainly would not own any, but it's gone from like $4.35 a share off a high of $7.12 to bid at $3.50. So, I mean, you know, it's lost 2 weeks. It's lost 20, 22% of its value.
How's Deutsche Bank doing?
Going from about 11.25, bid at 8.25. So yeah, 25% in 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's they've been. But how do you? I mean, on Friday I was watching. I mean, the S&P futures were all over the map too, but the Nasdaq, they would hit like a 60-point range. It would go up and down 60 points in like 15-minute intervals. That's all it kind of took. And I mean, if you have a system where you're somewhat, well, in our protected program, whenever we do a trade, it's always a spread, or it's always, you know, there's never anything that we have to, I mean, we're always just worried about price. So we were putting some orders in, and JD says to me, geez, you know, these things are, you know, 2 bid at 8. And I said, hey, just right, figure out the price you want, put it in there, and we're going to be only game in town. Somebody will fill us. Matter of fact, do it a little better than the price you went. Sure enough,
yeah, no, they had a thing, you know, in the afternoon thing on CNBC, and you know, one of these guys who's respected, he was voted, you know, whatever, analyst of the year, money manager of the year, some kind of thing, and he was very, really down to earth, and he said, in this environment, he said, yeah, we did go, and he did. He was talking before the real outbreak, third week of January. Hey, you know, 40% of the S&P 500 is 20% above their 200-day moving averages. The market's really extended. I'm lightening up. I'm going to go to 30% cash. So it isn't just hindsight. And he said, you know, now I got all this cash. And he said, I'm not going to say anything. You know, it's scary to step in front. He said, the only way you can, you know, if you have a stock that you think has been beaten up enough and you think there's value there and you want to buy it, he said, you put it in at a limit price, 10% below any expectation where you think you'd ever be able to get filled. And if you get filled, then live with it.
Well, the only issue with that is, what they used to call it in the trading floor, the ever-changing marketplace. I don't know if you were here for this seminar, Dave. It was a Saturday morning deal. This was a long time ago. And,
I was with a few. I
remember
at some of them.
I know. I'm saying you were. Yeah, you were. I mean, I'm just saying this particular one. Was renowned for two things. When the market was at a high, I'm going to guess this had to be. Yeah, Sarah was still here, so 12 years ago, maybe.
No, I was not there then.
Yeah, one guy comes in and he goes. I said, okay, why is everybody here on a Saturday morning? Other neat, really good rolls. God, we used to get great
donuts
rolls
too.
Oh yeah, well, plus Dan used to get that stuff in Bridgeport where the rolls had the bacon and cheese inside. God, are those things to die for or what? My niece was helping out and to be like a hostess because we had a lot of people, and she sees all the rolls and she goes, "You got to cut them in half. They're too big of a commitment on the rolls." Anyway, so one guy, I says, why is everybody here on a Saturday morning? I mean, it's a nice day. I'll be playing golf. One guy says to me, well, you know, I want you to teach me how to be short this market. I can't stand this market. And I said, well, really? So what kind of trading are you doing? Well, that's what I'm here to find out. I said, well, do you have any investments? Well, I open up an account. I got, you know, reasonable amount of money. I put it in. Matter of fact, I want to open up with you guys. I said, do you have a 401k? Oh, yeah, I got a big 401k. Right, I'm not going to ask you how big, but pretty big. Oh, yeah, pretty big. And I said, are you, what are you in there? You're all in cash then? Well, no, what do you mean? That's my retirement account. I'm all in stock. I said, well, you're that bearish, but you're all in stock. Yeah, but that's my retirement account. I said, I'm just asking you a question. I'm not criticizing. I'm saying, you're so bearish you can taste it. Yes. I said, yes, yet you have, did you make a contribution last week? Well, yeah, I make a contribution every week. So you're so bearish you can taste it, and last week you have 100% of your wealth outside of your house in stock, and oh, by the way, you bought last week. And he says, well, I can't believe you're looking at it that way. So how else am I going to look at it? I mean,
you're looking at facts.
I said, if you were totally bullish, how would you be? The same way you are now. He goes, yeah, I never thought of it. Anyway, I said, okay, everybody likes to look at stocks, and the idea is, like you just said, figure out a price where you'd want it. There's a buy price and a sell price. I mean, it's. And there's a you don't care price. I mean, if GE back in the day, and this is the example I'm using, I said if it's $35, I don't care. If it gets to 40, I might want to go a little short. I'm not going to short it, but I might do a put spread or something. If it goes to 30, anytime under 30, I think GE's a buy. I said, now what's the problem with that? One guy says, well, it's like 27. I go, yeah, that's a problem. I said, so now did everybody here agree that the GE with the dividend and everything in under 30 is a buy? Well, yeah, that makes sense. I said, okay, half of them were already clients. I said, I'm going to pass out some stock tickets, and instead of us filling them out, you fill them out. Put your account number in there and tell me how many shares of GE you want to buy. The guy goes, well, I don't want to buy any. I said, well, you just said under 30 you want to buy it. Yeah, but it's a 27. It ain't looking so hot. It went from there to what, 5? I mean,
and that's the commitment that you made. I mean, I don't do a lot of naked put selling. Here or there, a little bit of, you know, Apple's at 320 or whatever, and I say, hey, at 270, you know, let's the premium, you collect $5. You know, I'm willing to take the stock at 265 with the stock at 305. Well, the fact that it hit 265 last week, you make that decision when you sell the puts. I mean, Mark Cuban has made probably over $1 billion selling puts, but he had the capital and he made a decision. Hey, at this price, I will take the stock. I'm not going to start rolling the puts down, you know, because I then decided I didn't want it. You know, you can always turn around and sell calls, but you can't, you know, just say, oh, well, now the stock's at the price or below where I wanted it. I changed my mind.
Well, but I mean, if all of a sudden, I mean, if it was, when we say sell puts, we never sell anything naked. Okay, when we sell a put, it's cash secured. So in other words, if you have enough money to buy 1,000 shares of Apple at $277, first of all, my hat's off to you. But if you do, we're going to want that money in an account.
Sure.
And then somebody's going to say, well, I'm going to sell the 220 puts. And if it gets down there, I'll buy it at 220. Well, you've got 220,000. So it's cash. It's no more risk than owning the stock.
Right.
But you know what's interesting, David? I'm looking at some of these,
but if it's at 210, you can't say, oops.
Well, but I mean, if all of a sudden it runs down there, and I say, well, my decision wasn't based on all foreign travel around the world stopping.
Right.
This 220 doesn't look so hot. Maybe I'll buy those in and I'll sell the 210s out, you know, 6 months,
right,
and I'll, my new price, entry price will be 210. I mean, there's a way. Because,
right,
I mean, a lot of stuff can happen in the middle of the,
right,
day. I mean, I want to buy, X is a bad number. I want to buy Intel at 50 no matter what. When an asteroid hits New York, I'm not so sure I still want to buy Intel at 50. But I'm
right.
thinking.
No, I get it.
You know what I've got? Guess what the January Apple's at? It's up today, at least so far. It's up actually pretty good. It's up 450. It's trading 277. You know what the January 200 puts are? Talk about cab.
No idea.
What would you guess?
480.
They're like $8.
Oof.
Yeah. they're trading it like up to 35 vol or something. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? If you're Jim Cramer and says own it, don't trade it. I mean, you know, and he does have chapters in his books about options. He should go and sell those 200 puts for $8.
Well, I mean,
he believes in it that strongly. He's been touting it for 5 years and saw a rally from, you know, 155 to 3.25 at you know, 192 effective price. He ought to be selling them with both hands.
Well, there's two sentences. One is, I'd love to own an Apple at 200. I would, actually. Second is, what could happen between now and January?
That's right. Anything could happen.
Yeah, anything could happen. By the way, we just went positive on
the
S&Ps.
I mean, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be coronavirus. If they're left behind on 5G and don't have a super cycle starting in September, the stock might be at 175. You never know.
I know.
It may have nothing to do with coronavirus.
I know a couple of your sons are... Well, one of them, I think, is involved in some of this technical stuff. Jack Welch died. 84. He's got the 55-year-old wife, doesn't he?
I don't know.
Well, that's a shame. That's a shame. I was never a huge fan of the man, but still don't like anybody dying. Now we've got S&P futures. We just broke positive here. The Fed must have done something, or somebody did something. I'm not seeing anything on my screens, but... we just made a move. NASDAQ's now up 45. This is like last night all over again. So let's go back to last Friday, David. How do you, when you got 60-point moves in the NASDAQ, and you're looking at your chart, what do you just, you try and buy?
You know, I don't really have an answer. When I don't have an answer, I'm not going to make up one. But there was something happened at the close. There was some kind of month-end thing. Maybe somebody from the floor or someone, you know, from whatever outside might have a clue. Because the settlement price on March S&P E-mini was $29.51, and that was posted, and I received from the floor screenshots of it. The last tick in the closing range was $29.88.
Right,
I don't know if there was a rebalancing or a month-end match to cash. I have no idea what happened, but there was not just the furious rally. But, I mean, the settlement was 37 handles below the last tick.
Well, you know what else, David, is the spider is moving so much after 3 o'clock. I'm having a hard time finding out which is the settlement price and whether if you want to exercise or not.
I know. No, I'm serious because I have some just futures algorithms that I ran, and I hit this guy on the floor 5 times, and he had to send me a screenshot because I was going to say the close was around 29.73, and he had to make a picture that it was 29.51.
Right, because we ran way up on the close and then
broke, way up.
Yeah, then broke back down and settled less than that.
Right.
I mean, it's...
Something happened. I don't know what that was. I don't know. I'm guessing, you know, S&P rebalancing or something of a month-end match. Since Friday, I have not been able to ascertain what happened.
Well, I mean, the prices are really all over the place. That's why.
Yes.
I think what you're finding out now, if you want to try and, you know, buy some puts, they're so expensive. It's exactly the truth. If you want protection, you better get it when the getting's good, not when you need it. Which is,
right.
You know, ask yourself.
Unfortunately, when the VIX went to 49 from 16, and you know, settled at 40.5 or whatever, it's not going to be cheap.
What do you make of the 30? You know, you see the going out a couple months. It's got a $17. We only got 10 seconds. We'll talk about this later, David. S&P futures up 450 now. S&P futures up 40. That just happened. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
Hey guys,
what's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I gotta get out of here. I think I'm gonna lose it.
Uh oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.